This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Economic headlines have been driven lately by political headlines here in the Granite State. The New Hampshire House is sifting through Governor Sununu's budget and looking at tax cuts again. Meanwhile, President Trump presented his budget priorities last week, including a major increase in military spending, which could boost the state's defense-related industry. The president's also proposing large cuts in other programs, which again would have an impact on New Hampshire state agencies, cities, and towns. Today in The Exchange, politics and economics on our Economic News Roundup. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our Economic Roundup panel includes Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, good to see you.
Great being here, Laura.
Also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm in Laconia. And Russ, thanks for your time as well.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, Russ, I'll start with you, but want to hear from everybody. Before we get into this big topic that I just laid out, the impact of recent political decisions on the economy, what about just economic headlines, Russ? What's jumped out at you recently?
Well, there's really two things, I think. First of all, the old laws of supply and demand seem to be kicking in on the New Hampshire labor force situation, where our unemployment rate is low, 2.7%. As a result of that, we're starting to see employers bid up wages, which are up about 5 or 6%. And as a result of that, the labor force is in New Hampshire's finally starting to show some growth, up around 11,000. So it's sort of a classic case of supply and demand kicking up wages, pulling people back into the labor force. The other thing that I think I'd like to mention is that the Dow Jones Industrial Average,
which
is up, the stock market up 15% since November. And you start wondering, there's a lot of exuberance there. And going back to Greenspan's comment, is it rational or irrational? But it took 3 or 4 years for it to go up 15% prior to November 8th. And now here we are just a couple of months into the new administration, and investors are very confident.
Well, a little bit later in the show, I do want to talk more about that supply and demand in terms of labor and wages and so forth. So, Jeff, how about you? You're covering businesses and the economy every single day.
Yeah, I know. I have to say that it's really been interesting the last couple of months since the inauguration, that there does seem to be an optimistic feeling about the New Hampshire economy. All of a sudden, it's like some shade was lifted or something, and people seem more hopeful about this. I hear more talk about construction spending. I hear more talk about hiring or attempting to hire, businesses expanding. You know, we have we'll talk about it later, but that huge contract that Sig Sauer got is a sign that obviously New Hampshire companies are just doing very well right now, and it just seems to be going across all sectors, the real estate market for the most part, retail, the whole thing. And you talk to businesses. We had a big event the other day, our Bob Awards, Best of Business Awards, and I talked to a lot of business people there who were just feeling good about the New Hampshire economy. And it hasn't been like that for a long time now.
What's jumped out at you, Steve, national or New Hampshire?
Yeah, well, we watch probably 5 indicators on a quarterly basis to see, how things are going. And the one that really struck me was household confidence, financial confidence. There's, the UNHBIA survey looks at the share of families that think they're going to be worse off next year compared to this year.
Economically.
And in 2010, 60% of the families felt like they were going to be worse off. And this year, 17%. So there is, and in a world in which consumer spending really drives a lot of economic activity, that's a pretty good sign for the economy.
So wow. So let me just clarify that, Steve. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you there. So 17% of New Hampshire families said they felt they'd be worse off. That means just doing the math, upwards of 70-80% of New Hampshire families felt like they'd be better off economically
or
the same. Wow. So go ahead.
So that's one on that side. And sort of similar to that, as Russ said, wages have gone up about 5% year over year, which is a big jump. Jobless claims are almost at historic lows. That's either because they can find a new job fairly quickly or and then permits are starting. Housing permits are just starting to come up a little bit. They're still at almost historic lows, but they're peaking. So there are all these indicators that are sometimes leading indicators of recession that don't suggest we're going into a recession. Consumer confidence is high and business confidence is high.
All right. Again, the exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. What economic headlines have caught your attention these past few weeks? We'd love to hear from you, your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So, guys, let's talk a little bit about the federal budget and the impact here on New Hampshire. And, Steve, I don't think most people realize how important the federal budget is to our state's businesses and our state's government.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about the Department of Environmental Services, and a lot of the environmental spending that we do is largely federal funds. Half of the state's Medicaid program is funded by federal funds. So anything that the federal government does to Medicaid will impact the state. Transportation funds are largely, you know, federal dollars. If you start tweaking those big ticket items, it immediately starts to have an impact on New Hampshire.
What do you think, Russ? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that what we see in Washington is a major shift in priorities that will affect New Hampshire, if they're enacted. A shift towards defense spending, a shift away from the environmental protection and some of the, you know, kind of software type programs. And of course, this whole health care bill that was just announced this week would have a dramatic impact on the state's people and its budget.
Let's talk a little bit about the defense spending first, because that was a big, big ticket item in President Trump's budget last week. And how does that affect, Jeff, the New Hampshire economy, either directly or indirectly?
Well, defense spending is a pretty big component of the New Hampshire economy, because it's a major piece in the tech and the manufacturing economy in New Hampshire. This last study I found said there's about $2.9 billion was spent on contracts in New Hampshire, either directly on New Hampshire companies or on other companies in New England that are hiring New Hampshire companies to work on contracts. And it was about 17,000 jobs. This is back in 2012.
Sounds like a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of companies. And that's just the major contractors we're talking about, like BAE Systems, which is by far the biggest defense contractor in New Hampshire. 6 Hours, a new player on this. They just got that $500 million contract to manufacture a new pistol for the Army for the first time in many, many year decades. There are companies like former Colesman Elbit Systems, L3 Communications, which is based in Londonderry, is another major contractor. But other companies are benefiting from defense-related spending, and that's like... There's a company up in Lisbon that makes furniture, and they have a big contract with the Navy.
Wow, you think a Lisbon company? What does that have
Lisbon,
to do with you know
is,
a 10% increase in military
or
spending?
And there are companies like Red River Computing, which is in Claremont. They provide a lot of computers to the Pentagon and other agencies. Irving Oil is also a big contractor because they provide oil to the various needs that fill the needs of various agencies in New Hampshire, you know, military related things. So it's a big impact on the state, and if the increase of spending on things like the tech related stuff that BAE Systems does, for example, like communications and radar and stuff, you know, that could have another big impact on the state. And, you know, whether you believe in increasing the military budget or not, it does have a positive economic impact in New Hampshire.
Wow, that's interesting, Jeff, and a lot of interesting detail there. And, you know, Russ, if someone had asked me that question, I would have said Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, BAE Systems, and the Sig Sauer contract. I didn't realize it was so widespread.
Yeah, it is widespread. And actually, the shipyard is considered part of the main stuff. So the figures that Jeff was alluding to don't even include that.
Right, right. But a lot of New Hampshire people work there.
A lot of New Hampshire people work there, which brings to mind that a lot of New Hampshire people also work in Massachusetts, which is a very significant defense contractor with Raytheon. You know, We have about 85,000 New Hampshire people that commute to jobs in Massachusetts, and a lot of those are tech-oriented jobs. And in Massachusetts, you're looking at $15 billion in defense spending, much 6 or 7 times higher than in New Hampshire.
Interesting. So when we look at companies that benefit from increased military spending, don't just look at New Hampshire, look at Massachusetts, given how many people commute from New Hampshire to Mass?
85,000, roughly.
Wow. Okay. So those people
from New Hampshire to Massachusetts, right?
Steve, any further thoughts here?
I think it's going to depend on what happens to the spending. If this is about personnel, we have a very narrow niche in our state, not like Massachusetts, which has a much broader set of industries. So it's really a question of how targeted it is to the type of activities that BAE largely does, because they're the $1 billion. Elephant in our military complex here.
So it depends on what kind of defense spending, yeah. And maybe some of it, and I don't know, maybe some of it is going towards personnel, veterans. New Hampshire has a high percentage of veterans.
Yeah. One other thing, too, is this is all fresh money coming into the state. So you have a multiplier effect. So any numbers that we're citing here, you probably can add at least a half again as much once the people at, for example, BAE go out and go shopping at the mall or buy legal services. So, I've seen some of the multipliers are ridiculously high that people apply to the defense spending. But I think a conservative number is you could take whatever it is and add it half again or maybe twice as much as it circulates through the economy. So, and they're very good paying jobs. A lot of them are very technical. A lot of them have federal wage guidelines that apply to them. So it's a very significant impact. Sometimes the numbers don't look big in the overall context of things, but the impact is significant.
Yeah, I also came across a study on that was just coming out in February on the impact of spending on actually military personnel by state. And that includes not just people who are currently in the military, but also retirees. And I assume that also means like the shipyard-related stuff. But it was $1.4 billion that added to the economy. It's like 2% of a state GDP. There's like 6,000 people that come under this umbrella. I assume that also means National Guard members and stuff. That's a pretty big chunk also in terms. That's 2% of the state GDP is nothing to sneeze at. And this is just spending on, salaries, retirement, pensions, and all that stuff.
So sure.
That's another aspect.
Money in their pockets, they go to the movies or they buy that extra cup of coffee and so forth.
Yeah.
Lots more to talk about in terms of politics and economics. And in this segment, we're going to focus on national policies and how they affect the economy here in New Hampshire. And then we'll turn to state policies, especially with Governor Sununu's budget making its way through the legislature. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. How do you see decisions made at the federal level affecting the economy here in the Granite State? Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Steve, Jeff, Russ, let's go to our listeners. Kelly's in Nashua. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a question regarding what you had previously said about the overall climate of New Hampshire, feeling positive that they will be either the same or better off for the upcoming year. Do you think that's more attributed to the previous Obama administration, the new Trump administration, or something else?
Well, it's a great question, and there were some numbers floating around about the economy that President Obama left President Trump, so to speak, as if presidents, are the only ones waving their magic wands and making the economy do things. But Steve, do you care to comment?
I think you have to split the economy from the stock market, I think, in this one. Mm-hmm. I think, you certainly do owe the last 10 years, really, to what's happening now in terms of our economy. You can't look to yesterday. However, I think the message that the Trump administration gave about deregulation of the banks,
lower taxes,
et cetera, created some investment exuberance. And so I think we're seeing some probably the stock market is more a function of that. And it's certainly correlated with the election of Donald Trump.
Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I just looked at the chart on business conditions, optimism in the business community, which parallels what Steve said. And there was a huge jump after the election, in the last quarter. So I think some of it is, as Steve mentioned, deregulation, a preference for deregulation, spending stuff, the infrastructure stuff, tax cuts, on the business side. And that sort of I think it does filter into consumers' thinking as well.
Yeah, but I do have to say that if you look at the growth in the economy during the Obama administration, you know, the growth of employment, it's been sustained for many years now, and it's continuing. And I remember in the very early days of the Obama administration, there were critics of President Obama who said, you know, he was responsible for the recession that he had just, you know, and so, which was not true because he came in. He was the new guy on the block. And the same thing is with Trump, to give him credit for the momentum that the economy seems to have seems a little illogical at this point.
Well, thank you for the call, Kelly. And we've got somebody else, guys, who has a similar question. This is Alexander in Twin Mountain, who sent us an email. He says that growing in household confidence is great, but isn't that reflective in any presidential year? And Russ, I have heard that, at least in terms of the stock market, that investors don't like uncertainty. And so 3 or 4 months before an election, they just, you know, hunker down. And then afterwards they say, oh, this is what it's going to be. Okay. And they jump back in.
Yeah. It's sort of a fresh breeze that blows through, I think, the investment community when you have a new administration come in with a lot of promises. You know, when Obama came in, of course, the economy was really in the tank. That's not the case with Trump, although there's a lot of tension between the haves and the have-nots. But by and large, he's inheriting a pretty decent set of numbers. So a kind of a fresh breeze comes through. We're going to change things, make things better. So you develop an optimistic mindset, I think.
Again, the exchange number for you to join us, like Kelly did, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So, guys, other federal agencies may get the opposite experience of the Defense Department. Deep cuts in some other types of programs, including the Environmental Protection Agency. Jeff, your thoughts on how this might affect New Hampshire's economy?
Well, actually, if you look at it in various ways, it cuts into the Environmental Protection Agency means less money for, as Steve mentioned, the Department of Environmental Services directly. And the other thing is deregulation, and that's another factor that affects businesses in New Hampshire positively and negatively. There have been a lot of rules available, about encouraging the use of renewable energy, for example, and basing, you know, on affected on emissions, and that has really helped spur the growth in the solar and alternative energy industry in New Hampshire. We've seen that in the last several years now. In terms of just the EPA itself, in terms of cutting spending, I don't have numbers on this, not like, you know, Steve or Russ do, but I do know that there have been a lot of businesses in the state that have thrived because of the environmental regulations and the programs of the EPA.
Wait,
in terms
thrived
of,
because of environmental regulations? You know, that's not the narrative you usually hear.
Well, actually, the governor himself was formerly in one of those businesses, you know, engineering firms that do work on cleaning up Superfund sites, brownfield sites, cleaning up underground storage tanks and, you know, doing all kinds of engineering involving wetlands and things like that. There's companies that do very well on that. I'm not going to say it offsets other kinds of regulations, but there are companies that exist because of environmental programs, environmental regulations, and environmental spending.
Well, we talked about this yesterday on the show. We had a gentleman who works on wastewater for the city of Manchester and the head of New Hampshire's Dam Bureau, and they both talked about the environmental regulations, the Clean Water Act, and how that has created these wonderful recreation spaces for New Hampshire. People, their property values go up because they live on a nice impounded lake and so forth. But it's a little less easy to see, Russ, than sort of,
yeah,
Here's defense spending, here's the company that benefits.
I think that's right. And I think you could say that about a lot of regulations, that, yeah, they impose a short-term cost, but they also create benefits. Think of the food safety. There's a lot of costs that go into bringing safe food to our tables. But there's a lot of benefit in not being sick as well.
Absolutely.
So you got to look at both sides.
I'm going to cut you off there, Russ. And coming up, we'll continue to look at politics and economics on our Economic News Roundup. Stay with us.
Just because you binge-watched West Wing does not mean you understand how government works. And that is okay. NHPR's new podcast, Civics 101, reviews the fundamentals that you learned in school and then forgot. Like, what exactly does a chief of staff do?
Most presidents don't like firing people.
Subscribe to Civics 101 on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Schoolhouse Rock meets politics for grown-ups.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, our economic news roundup, we've been looking at politics and economics, talking about some of the federal budget proposals that President Trump has made, how they might affect the economy here in the Granite State. We're going to turn now to Governor Sununu's state budget, which is making its way through the legislature. Let's hear from you, your questions and comments about how some of these state policy decisions will affect the economy here in New Hampshire. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Steve Norton is here, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, Jeff Feingold, Editor of the New Hampshire Business Review, and Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm in Laconia. And gentlemen, let's turn to the state budget and other economic-related proposals in the legislature. And Steve, to you first, how important is the state budget when it comes to, you know, the decisions that businesses make, that individual households make? You know, yes, I'm going to go on that trip or no, I'm not.
Yeah, so there are lots of ways that the budget impacts folks. You know, businesses, we have R&D tax credits. We have, in this legislative session, they're increasing the tax credits that are going to be funded through CDFA, which is increasing capital for projects that could, you know, materially impact families.
CDFA is Community Development Finance Authority.
Sure. Yep. There are, you know, Medicaid has a significant impact on hospitals, which has a significant impact on almost every community in which there is a hospital. So it, just like the federal government, even though the direct impact may not be completely clear, we spend $5.2 billion a year, and that plays out throughout the economy.
Well, and just a micro example, you guys did a study a while back on hospitals and how important they are to the economies of their local communities. So there's just one micro example.
That's right. And if you look at New Hampshire's economy, the biggest sector is still manufacturing. Healthcare is a close second.
What about tourism, Steve?
Tourism, very impactful in certain parts of the state, and obviously, but the actual movement of people into the state represents a relatively small share of our economic activity. Communities like the Lakes region have a lot of retirees that live there because it's such a beautiful place, but I don't bump that into the sort of tourism bucket. But yeah, so, and those, and tourism has actually been increasing quite a bit. It's one of the most robust parts of growth that's occurring right now. Meals and rooms tax have gone up 5% year over year, and that's, you know, that's a good growth.
Jeff, I'd like to hear from you too on this broad economic impacts of the state budget and how just what the state house decides affects the economy.
Well, first of all, you know, this whole debate we've had for a few years now in terms of lowering the business profits tax and the business enterprise tax rate has apparently had some effect. We're not really sure about that, but it has been lowered, and it's scheduled to go get lower even further. Actually, the governor had in his budget did not ask for it to be low, to just continue on this schedule of, I think it's going down to 7.9%. There is a bill in the Senate, I believe, that would lower the rate even further, but I think it appears to be just not going anywhere because I don't want to get too – this is something for Friday, but, you know, the House Ways and Means Committee came up with a projection that there would be $60 million less in revenue. So I think they're kind of putting the brakes on any further tax cuts. But there are other things like the R&D tax cut, a tax deduction. There are other benefits from that states – that besides taxes that business I know are specifically interested in, and that's – a lot of it involves healthcare spending. Because that has a big effect on businesses. As Steve has pointed out and other people pointed out here, in many communities, hospitals are the biggest employer by far in many communities around the state.
And quote-unquote, good jobs.
Exactly. And that does have an effect on how those hospitals operate, how their doctors, you know, how many doctors they have, how many nurses they have, all that stuff that affects every community that has a hospital or even is near a hospital. So this is something that people I know in the business community are very, you know, they've paid a lot of attention to. That's even separate from the Medicaid expansion debate, which also is something that business organizations like the BIA, the Business and Industry Association, and others are still very concerned that they think it's been working, that by having more people having access to insurance, that has helped kind of stabilize the healthcare industry in the state. So those are the big items. There are smaller things as well, like funding tourism promotion, making sure that there's an adequate marketing campaign to market New Hampshire, so people will come to the Lakes Region or North Country or Lake Sunapee and spend some money, go skiing in the winter. And those are little things in terms, that's not very much money in terms of the budget, but it does have an impact on individual businesses.
Sure, putting a couple nice posters on the subway in New York, who knows what that will what that will bring. How do you see it, Russ, as an economist? What do you look at as this budget goes through the process?
Well, I saw a couple of things that I really liked in the budget. I don't want to cross over from the economic world into the quagmire of politics, but
well, we're kind of mixing it up today.
Excuse my innocence, maybe. But one of the things I liked was full-day kindergarten, which I think will have an impact on businesses because it affects child care. If your child is only in half-day kindergarten, that affects the way you can work because you got to pick running back and forth.
Right.
And so I think that was a positive thing for the business community and for our households as well. The other thing is that I saw is that the governor is proposing turning something like $84 million back to the communities for infrastructure improvements on roads and bridges. That will have a direct impact on construction spending in the state. And it will also help keep the state's infrastructure viable, which, not unlike most of the country, we haven't been doing a good enough job keeping up with the depreciation of our infrastructure. So those were a couple of things that I saw. I saw actually a lot of things that I liked. A fairly modest increase overall in spending. Maybe a little disappointing, no increase in higher education, the university system, but an increase in community colleges, which will affect businesses, although I know that Ross Cattell would, the chancellor, would like to see more.
Yes, and he was on with us a couple
weeks
ago.
Right, I heard the show.
And
so I saw a lot of things in there that looked pretty good to me, actually.
Yeah, and Steve, speaking of that infrastructure bank that Russ mentioned, not just roads and bridges, right? Communities can spend this however they want. So if their middle school is falling apart, they could spend it on that.
Well, we've had these infrastructure programs for many years. So we've had school building aid, which was an effort to help local communities figure out how to update their schools. We've had revolving funds to help local communities deal with their wastewater infrastructure and their drinking water. They've all not been funded. And now there's this pool of money. And so I think the devil is actually, again, in the details of how this is going to be structured. What rules are they going to put into place to prioritize communities, or which infrastructure they're going to fund? The reason they did it this way, created a $100 million fund, is that the governor believes that was just one-time money that they had available to themselves, and it wouldn't be recurring down into the future. But there are bills in the Senate right now. I know the Senate president is very interested in the water aspects of this. So
I hope you caught our show yesterday,
because
that's what we talked about. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of road we're going to have to go down before we figure out exactly how it's going to play out.
But again, in terms of just personal economic impact, like me sitting here, homeowner in Concord, if Concord applied for funding, Steve, to improve its water infrastructure, let's say, that helps me because then Concord doesn't have to tax me more for those improvements.
Right, that's exactly
so
right.
So there's an economic impact there.
And schools. I mean, everyone is pretty much in agreement that when you have a good school system, it's going to attract younger families. And so let's say you wanted to upgrade Rundlett, the local middle school, which is a bit dated. That could have an impact on the local community and our ability to attract families.
Well, and it gets to what Russ talked about, too. He, as an economist, again, liked full-day kindergarten proposals because we do hear from realtors that people looking to come into the state with little kids or hoping to start a family say, Bo has it, Concord doesn't. I think I'll move to Bo. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, also, I just wanted to say that we did a story in the Business Review a few months ago on this whole idea of the school building aid program, which had been very successful for many years because the state basically footed the bill for much of the bill for construction of new school buildings or renovations. But it's been suspended for, as Steve said, for a long time now. But we found out that there's a backlog of, schools, districts that want to do this work, and they go on the list even though there's no money, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars in projects waiting to be done. But if you follow even slightly what goes on in school districts, at school meetings, very, very frequently these things are not supported because they're not getting an aid from the state. So if a district does need some help, it's not getting it, so it's putting off this construction, which, if you bring it down to the micro level, that's affecting the construction companies that have been forced to go find other places, that, you know, who used to specialize in school buildings. And now they've been forced to find other areas to specialize in or to work in because they just weren't able to count on this money anymore to be building schools. And that's you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, that's pretty good for a state like ours if they did that kind of work.
Go ahead, Russ. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I didn't see that I would have liked to have seen over the last month or so, I've been working in some communities that are getting a lot of new commercial development. And earlier this week, I was in a southern New Hampshire community that isn't and that is property poor. And there was a woman that commented on, I'm taking care of my mom. I'm taking care of my grandchildren. My husband can't retire because we need his health care. And their tax rate is approaching $40 a thousand in this community. And as one commenter said, it would be one thing if we're spending a high tax rate. And that compares to, say, some of the communities in the Lakes region where it's $8. So we're talking five times above. He said it would be one thing if we were getting all our kids going to Harvard or whatever, but we're not. So one of the things that I would have liked to have seen was more education aid for those communities that are property poor, because it does. I know this is a long-standing issue in the state. The whole Claremont thing, over and over, but we still haven't solved it.
That's a really good point, Russ, because that was the whole idea, was to lower the property tax burden, to make it easier for these property poor districts. But as you see, you know, this is almost 25 years after the Claremont decision, and there really has been no improvement.
Well, again, it's politics and economics on our economic news roundup today in the Exchange. And let's hear from you. Here's the question that I'm going to ask our guests, and you can join us as well. Given that Governor Sununu has an opportunity with the state in good fiscal shape, what are the investments he could make that would strengthen the foundation for New Hampshire's economy down the road? I'm going to ask our economist guests this, and I want to hear from you, our listeners, as well. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, Stephen, I'm going to turn to you first on this one because I know you've been talking to lawmakers for a while about this. So lawmakers recently said, okay, Governor Sununu, we don't think you have quite as much money to play with as you think, but everybody agrees the state is in a good fiscal position. So what are some of the investments that top state leaders are talking about that will strengthen that economic foundation for us down the road?
I think what I'm hearing in the legislature right now is that 2008, going into the Great Recession, everyone put a lot of brakes on spending. We reduced our spending considerably. We stopped some of these programs. We lowered municipal aid.
State building aid.
We really cranked back our spending to reflect the revenues that were coming in. And I think many are trying to prioritize where we need to invest that any additional resources we have going forward. And I think they're focusing in really two areas. One is infrastructure, whether it's roads, water infrastructure, the things that make us go as a state. They're really thinking about that. And the second piece is human capital. I think everyone is recognizing that this incredibly low unemployment rate is actually not a good thing for the state in the sense that it means we have constraints. What are we going to do? Are we going to invest in our higher education system? Are we going to invest in the community college system? Are we going to do kindergarten to create, you know, a pipeline of kids that will be well-educated, or create an economic incentive for people to move here? I think that those are really the two things that are going to drive this, you know, next legislative conversation.
Well, and we asked Governor Sununu about the workforce development issues that you mentioned, Stephen. You know, where do you prioritize? We cited some of the calls that we've received, all of us, on this economic roundup. You know, employers saying, I'm ready to expand, but I can't find the people. We've gotten some pretty compelling calls. So what do you hear, Stephen, the governor's proposals on this end in terms of this critical workforce development issue?
So he included a $5 million scholarship program to support New Hampshire kids going to any New Hampshire college. So in times past, in periods past, governors have put resources directly into the university system. Governor Sununu's approach was slightly different. Obviously, the kindergarten piece is a long-term workforce, but also potentially short-term in drawing people into communities where they have Certainly, he made a bunch of statements about 100 businesses in 100 days, which isn't really part of the budget, but it was definitely part of his political campaign. And, of course, his reorganization of the Division for Resource and Economic Development suggests an additional focus on this area, the impact of which isn't clear, but
natural resources, tourism.
Tourism, exactly, and really pulling out the economic development component of it.
Which you would expect from a guy who used to run a ski area.
That's
he
right.
appreciates
yes, both of those things.
That angle of it.
But there's also one other piece. He's asked Taylor Caswell of the CDFA to spearhead an effort to understand how we bring all of these different workforce activities and align them. So we have the Workforce Opportunity Council, we've got the governor's initiatives, we've got previous governor's initiatives, we've got CDFAs putting capital into these types of things, the Business Finance Authority, which is putting capital into activities which could be related to workforce. So all of those things are potentially going to shape workforce.
What do you think, Jeff? How much emphasis are you hearing from the governor and other state leaders on this crucial issue of, you know, training workers, getting New Hampshire people up to the jobs that everybody says are available?
I think that in many cases, the governor especially, I mean, I think he understands this issue. I know he's talked about it on the campaign trail, and, you know, I know we've asked him that kind of stuff, and he does say he wants to do these things. I'm not quite sure if the effort is as strong as it could be in terms of the demands.
Or as organized. As Steve points out,
absolutely.
There are a lot of people sort of working at this from different ends. And
yeah. I actually talked to someone who watches this stuff closely, who's in business, and he said he was disappointed in the lack of increase in funding for the university system in particular, because he thinks that that's something that's important, as well as the community college system. And it says, I think, sends the wrong message. And I, from what I understand, there's going to be an attempt to increase some money for the university system as well. You know, the scholarship idea, I think, was got a good reception. It's something that, you know, when you hear it, you go, why haven't we had this before? You know, to reward the good, smart young people in the state to say, you know, we want you to stay here and go to school here.
Well, and that's kind of a political decision too, right? Yeah. To do it that way, to say, yes. Here's a scholarship fund that goes directly to students, because just giving the money to the university
yes.
system is, you know, it gets caught up in politics.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think that the feeling is that if the university system is not funded at the level that at least this person thought it should be, that it'll be a step backwards for the system itself. And you know, I think the person specifically thinking about University of New Hampshire myself, but I didn't get into the details on that.
Russ, I'm going to put you in charge for one day.
Okay, all right.
So you're in charge for one day. As we said, New Hampshire's in pretty good fiscal shape. What's the one investment that you think the state could make to, you know, attack this workforce development issue?
Yeah, I think that it's probably a little bit more of blowing our own horn as a viable place for new businesses. One of the things I looked at since the last time we got together was the comparative wages of Southern New Hampshire and Middlesex County, Massachusetts, which basically runs from, you could think, Nashua down to Cambridge. And it's huge. The difference in wages is huge. So it made me wonder, we talk about the New Hampshire advantage all the time. I'm wondering if part of it is that we have affordable labor force and we got room to bump wages up here. I think that we have a lot of good infrastructure in Southern New Hampshire, I-93. And so marketing doesn't sound like a lot, but maybe a more aggressive marketing of the broad range of assets that we have that are distinctive.
We'll talk more after a short break. Stay with us.
Just because you binge-watched West Wing does not mean you understand how government works. And that is okay. NHBR's new podcast, Civics 101, reviews the fundamentals that you learned in school and then forgot. Like, what exactly does a chief of staff do?
Most presidents don't like firing people.
Subscribe to Civics 101 on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Schoolhouse Rock meets politics for grown-ups.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our economic roundup. We're looking at politics and the impact on economics. Also, we want to know, how are you feeling about your own economic future? We talked about some of the optimism that the surveys have shown recently. It's our economic roundup again. We'd love your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Steve Norton, Jeff Feingold, Russ Tebow, back to our listeners. Joshua's calling in from Manchester. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just really want to stress that I think that investing in transportation is really important for our economic growth. And I think that one of the key points or key policies that have been discussed is a commuter rail from the greater Manchester area to Boston, which I think would not only help the Manchester area, but would actually trickle up to the northern country, too. So, and in regards to that, I'd also like to see more of a connection between towns in New Hampshire with, like, a interconnected bus system that runs more frequently. And this might be asking for a lot, but even state-managed casino gambling to really attract tourism up here to spend money.
All right. Joshua, thank you. And three good points. And from what I understand, casino gambling, right, Steve, off the table so far.
There's another bill.
Yeah.
No, you can't say it's off the table because it's always on the table.
Right.
Which table? The roulette table or the blackjack table?
The craps table.
Someone to say that.
The crap table.
Right. It usually gets more attention when we're in budget crisis and we're not
that's
in budget
right.
crisis.
And that's right. But there is a bill out there and there will be a conversation about it. But, you know, this issue of transportation, obviously critically important. There's a reason why 89 and there's and 91 and their businesses tend to cluster on those roads. This question of rail, I think, is probably going nowhere in a world in which we have the political alignment that we do. I happen to think the conversation is probably not the right conversation. I think Republicans have said that, you know, we shouldn't be subsidizing with taxpayer dollars rail. Well, we're doing that with taxpayer dollars for I-93 as well. So it's a question of priority and impact. And I don't think until Manchester and Nashua are willing to put up their own resources, I don't think anything will, you know, ultimately happen with that. You know, by the time we make a decision on that, we might have self-driving cars and it might be a moot point. But
or flying cars.
Yeah. But I think what the point he's making I think is a good one, and that is that, you know, in the last 20 years, we've had a vision for helping the North Country, but we haven't really had a vision for what we want for the southern part of the state and how we might focus and link up Manchester, Nashua, and Portsmouth more effectively. And I think, you know, in this time period of good economic activity, we might have an opportunity to think a little more grandly about how we take advantage of a proximity of those three cities and also think about its proximity to the Massachusetts market.
Well, he mentioned east-west bus service, Russ, and this is something people talked about for a long time. Hasn't really happened. But as the population ages, as more and more people don't want to drive, really shouldn't drive, do you ever see this coming? I personally have family in Keene. I would love to just get on a bus and not think about driving
sure.
to Keene.
I think that the geography of New Hampshire is unfavorable to
east-west.
East-west and mass transit generally, other than maybe Manchester south. I know we do have commuter rail along the seacoast into Boston, which having done some work recently in Dover, I may be wrong, but I haven't seen a huge change in the city's prospects, which are excellent to begin with, Dover, and Durham, I think, has a stop. I think the geography of the state isn't favorable. You really need density to make that stuff work. It's working very well in the Lebanon-Hanover area. There's that connecting Lebanon to Hanover and allowing the labor force to live in a broader geographic area for the Dartmouth-Hitchcock and the college, Dartmouth College. But generally in New Hampshire, the densities are just so thin that it would require very sizable subsidies to make it work. We're all used to driving.
Well, Joshua, thank you for the
actually,
call.
And actually, what Russ is pointing out, also because of that lack of density, it prevents innovations like Uber and Lyft from actually providing services in places like Keene or even more rural areas because, you know, they're concentrated right now in the cities. And if there's not enough of a critical mass of people, you can't find drivers who are going to go to Ringe to Keene or something like that, and that's one of the issues we have. But what Joshua was saying about the commuter rail was the same arguments that people have been making for a few years now, especially in the Manchester and Nashua Chambers of Commerce, saying that this is an economic development, or this will be a good thing for people. But it's an argument as Steve said, you know, that just is not gaining any traction. Certainly not in this in the legislature the way it's composed this time around.
Go ahead, Russ. Real quick.
I was just going to say, highly focused solutions seem to be working. For example, the Concord to Logan connection by bus works very well, to the point where it's almost easier for me from Laconia to go fly from Logan than to fly from Manchester, because I can hop on the bus, get dropped right at my gate, nothing to think about, don't have to think about cost of parking. So I think very focused solutions can work. I mentioned the Hanover-Lebanon area, but broadly speaking, it's a really a challenge.
Well, and there's a new bus from Concord to New York City.
There you go.
With one stop.
I did see
actually,
that.
Actually, that Hanover-Lebanon area, that's all driven by the major employers there, the college, the medical center, and also Hypertherm. And because they have their employees are living down and finding affordable housing in Claremont, for example. And I understand there's been proposals. The Regional Planning Commission up there is looking at expanding bus service to New London, to the Upper Valley.
Which is
not. Because a lot of people are living in that area as well. And this is all being driven by the demands of employers.
Interesting. All right. Well, Joshua, thank you for the call. And again, the number for you to join us on our economic roundup is 1-800-892-6477. We're asking what you think the state should make in terms of investments to lay a better economic foundation here in New Hampshire. Joshua thinks it's more public transportation. What do you think? Again, 1-800-892-6477. Michael's in Concord. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm surprised that when you talked about the budget, you didn't mention the steady diminution of state aid to cities and towns over the last 8-9 years, whether it's highway funds, revenue sharing, rooms and meals tax distribution, school building aid, it goes on. And all of that just puts higher pressure on property taxes. And I know Russ mentioned the property poor towns. It drives up property taxes, which drives up housing costs, which exacerbates the demographic problem because we don't have people moving here.
Sure. So, and from my understanding, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, did the governor's budget return some of that aid to cities and towns that used to be pretty generous?
It did, but certainly not to the level that prior to the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. That was a real fundamental alteration of the relationship between the state and municipalities. They eliminated their contribution to the pensions. you know, they stopped doing school building aid and the like. And you know,
it was under Governor Lynch, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, and that was a big, big deal. I remember when that budget came out going, wow, that's a game shifter.
It is. Yeah.
You know, actually, this has happened in previous recessions, you know, in the early 90s, you know, when the government, state government needed money, they took it away from the cities and towns. And that's pretty much that's the MO of state government. And
downshifting.
Yeah. And downshifting uplifts or upraises the property tax rate. That's what happens. That's the link. And it's interesting that, you know, we have all these members of the legislature who don't actually, they're voting against their interests of their own constituents in many ways.
And themselves, considering their age profile.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's an interesting disconnect I've noticed for all the years I've been here, that this does seem to be a connection between, you know, what goes on in Concord also affects what's going on in your city and town and top property, right?
Well,
property
Michael,
taxes.
Michael did a good job of sort of connecting the economic dots for us there. So, Michael, thank you for calling in. So, guys, I did want to turn just briefly to, again, New Hampshire's low unemployment numbers. Russ, I think you mentioned this at the top. I think we are now, if not the lowest in the nation, among the lowest in the nation.
We are. And interestingly, so if you take the top 12 lowest state unemployment rates, it's New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, and Vermont, which is kind of curious that we and our neighbors are ranked with a very low unemployment rate. What I think you have to think about, too, is our unemployment rate is around 2.7. Last year, it averaged 2.8%. If you start adding in some of the peripheral issues of employment and unemployment, you get add in discouraged workers, people that said, the heck with it, I'm not going to look for a job anymore. They're out of the labor force. They don't count in that 2.8% figure. If you add in people that are working only temps. And then the biggest difference is if you add in the people that are working part-time but wish they were working full-time. In New Hampshire last year, our official unemployment rate was 2.8%. If you add those factors in, and especially the ones that are working part-time but would like a full-time job, you get up to 6.4%.
Oh, so that doesn't sound so good.
It doesn't sound so good. It's not terrible. Nationally, you get up to 9.6% from about 4.9%. Uh-huh. So there's a big increase, and the biggest part of it is people that are working part-time but wish they had full-time jobs. That may be driven partly by the health care thing where, 29 hours or less, yeah. You don't have to provide health insurance. It's probably driven a bit by our economy, which is showing growth in food service and accommodations, hotels, lodging, which tend to be part-time jobs. So I think that the unemployment rate, even with the 6.4%, is favorable to the national rate. But whenever I talk about unemployment, people start saying, yeah, but.
Sure.
And they're right.
And on this program, we've gotten those calls. Stop talking about how great the unemployment rate is. You know, I'm not feeling so great because my wages are low or my hours are crummy or so and so forth. Right. Go ahead, Steve.
I think the demographic profile of the Northeast explains a lot of our low unemployment rate. Our workforce is growing much more slowly than in other parts of the country. We don't have as many babies because we're older. So we have all these dynamics which mask not great job growth, but rather slow growth in the workforce. You know, I think businesses would much rather us be like Colorado, have an unemployment rate around 6%. Mm-hmm. And that's because they've got a lot of folks moving to Colorado right now, maybe don't have a job yet, but that's a big labor pool to choose from.
One other thing, too, that relates to what you're saying, Steve, is a good point. And the labor force is defined as people age 16 and over that are either working or looking for a job. So it starts at very young age, 16. I think they should modify that to 21 to maybe age 65, the prime. So you can get labor force stuff for the prime working age. But so if we have
an 25 to 54.
Right. If we have an old population in New Hampshire, we don't have as many 16 to 21-year-olds that are still in school or should still be in school, and that would actually result in the math of it would result in a lower unemployment rate, which seems to be the case.
Well, and Jeff, it's not just about having a job, full or part-time. It's a matter of having good wages.
Yes.
Russ said at the beginning, I think, that wages are starting to go up here in the state.
Yeah, wages are starting to go up, and we have seen that. We've seen some pressure on that because the unemployment rate is so low. But it's also not – one of the things I just wanted to say, I just wanted to mention in terms of what Steve and Russ were saying is that, you know, the unemployment rate – is really low among people who have the skills that are needed at some of these, you know, more tech manufacturing companies. They could probably find a job in
and healthcare institutions
in a day.
As well. That's
and healthcare institutions as well. So we're talking about in the specific industries that's the dichotomy here. Is we have people who are underemployed who want to work more, but then we also have these job openings, but those people don't necessarily have the skills, the background required to take these more high-tech jobs. And that's one of the concerns about building the workforce, improving the quality of the workforce of New Hampshire that has to be addressed in Concord.
Wages are going up, though, right, Russ?
Yes.
Yeah, they're up around 5-6%.
Which is higher than inflation.
And if you look at manufacturing wages, it really was a very large bump. I think it's like 22% since 2013, which plays into what Jeff was saying, that the skilled jobs. On the other hand, I was talking with a large accommodations guy, hotel, motel. And he said, I had to bump my wages $3 an hour, which is sizable when you're paying.
That's a lot.
Not very much to begin with to get good people. He said, I interviewed 17 people last week and only one of them made the cut. So even at the lower skill levels, there's stress on finding qualified people that are employable.
Did you want to jump in there,
no,
Steve?
No, we've heard that again and again and again. No matter what industry, no matter what skill level, everyone is having difficulty finding.
And
even in the North Country.
Yes.
You know, the North Country still has a lower unemployment rate than the rest of the country.
Wow. That's important to point out.
Yeah. So it's across the board.
It's interesting, Russ, something you said, I've heard from employers too. I interviewed a whole mess of people. And only one or two people made the cut. Why aren't these large numbers of other people making the cut?
A lot of it, there was a Employment Security's monthly publication this month talked about the importance of experience as well as education. So I think that there are a lot of people that don't have the experience that these employers are looking for. There are a lot of people that don't. When you get down to this low an unemployment rate, you're really looking at people who probably don't have an employment history, don't have a history of showing up on time, don't have a history of staying with the job for a while. Maybe they have some substance abuse.
Or mental health issues, or some other.
That could be part of it. Could be family issues. A child that got sick, I had to quit my job. Mm. So kind of like the, I think the experienced, the unemployed experienced labor force is lower than this 2.7% it's sounding like. It's basically you can have a job if you want one and you've got a halfway decent employment history or promise of that.
Well, guys, we have just about a minute left, and I did want to ask everybody, I'll start with you, Jeff, what economic numbers or events are you going to be watching over the next couple of weeks,
Well, one of the things I just want to talk about was that I did want, we are going to look more closely at this plan for the division, the Department of Resources and Economic Development, what that's going to mean for economic development specifically. But I have to say I've become fascinated, I try not to, but with the Dow and the stock market in general. I've been keeping an eye on that now for the last several weeks, and I'm going to keep doing it because, as Russ quoted earlier, Alan Greenspan, you know, it's got to, you know, I think when the reality of healthcare reform and tax reform proposals come out, I think it might actually, the bubble might burst.
I think I'm going to be watching this evolving debate and prospect on healthcare, national healthcare. I think that this will tell a lot about the political movements in the country, which, you know, there are radically different policies that the Trump administration has forwarded. How many of those come to fruition remains to be seen. And this is the first big test, I think. And so I'm watching that. And then the Fed is probably going to raise interest rates in a week or two.
They always say that.
I know.
Every time we get together, we say the Fed's going to raise interest rates.
She did actually say it the other day after five or six or seven months of speculation. This one's a slam dunk.
Okay, so that's not good for the housing industry if interest rates go
up. Yeah, if they go up a little bit, it's probably not terrible, though.
Okay. Steve, what are you going to be keeping an eye on?
Revenue estimates.
Right.
April. March is a big month, and it will, I think, help shape the way House Ways and Means and Senate negotiate around the budget.
Okay. All of you, this has been great. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Jeff Feingold, he is editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. And our conversation always continues online, on Facebook, and at nhpr.org. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.